And the reason they chose Nagi Sharanya is because it is said Nagi Sharanya is marks the hub of the universe, just like there's a North Pole and South Pole. And
I don't know, 8th or 9th grade science kids learn the axis of the Earth is tilted 23.5 degrees. So it's not like the North Pole is here and the South Pole is here, but the North Pole is here and the South Pole is there, and the Earth spins on a polar axis. But it's not like there's a prong or a stick sticking through the Earth. You go in the North Pole, you see a big flag at the top, and the South Pole, another flag at the bottom. It's just the axis upon which the Earth turns, yes? Similarly, there's an axis that the universe turns. And that axis passes through the Earth planet at Nagi Sharanya. And because of that, whatever, it's an auspicious place, and whatever beneficial activity is performed there is distributed through the whole universe. So they considered that would be a good place to do this 10,000-year sacrifice. And as they were commencing their sacrifices, series of sacrifices, in their midst they found there was Suta Goswami. And Suta Goswami has a number of credentials. He was the son of Ramaharshan Suta, who was a direct disciple of Vyasadeva. And Ramaharshan, when Vyasadeva was dividing the Vedas, he was entrusted with the Puranic portion. And Padma Purana is part of that. And so he was very knowledgeable. But more than knowledgeable, he was in the audience when Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. And they had not heard Srimad Bhagavatam, and they were very eager to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So they approached Suta, very elderly sages, headed by Shonaka Rishi in the Bhrigu dynasty, and thousands of sages. They approached Suta and basically asked him to retell what he heard, because this is the system in spiritual circles. You speak in a descending fashion that which you heard. Exactly what Krishna says in chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita. Imam vivasvate yogam proktavan aham avyayam. Krishna says that he spoke this very same message that he was speaking to Arjuna previously, over 3 million years ago, previously, he spoke to the sun god, Vivaswan. And Vivaswan spoke to his son, Vaivasvatamanu. And Vaivasvatamanu spoke to his son, Ikshvaku. And as we know, Ikshvaku brought that same knowledge here and began the Surya dynasty on the Earth planet. So this is the way of spiritual knowledge. One repeats what one hears from the previous personalities, ultimately, who heard directly from Krishna. It's called parampara. So as Shukadev heard from Vyas, who received the knowledge from Narada, and Narada received the knowledge from Brahma, and Brahma received the knowledge from Krishna, so when Shukadeva Goswami spoke, he was speaking in disciplic succession. And Suta was in the audience, front row seat. And not only he heard, but he understood. And not only he understood, but he had realized and assimilated that knowledge, that the sages honored him in that way. And rather than just saying, can you recite the whole thing beginning to end, they asked a series of questions. It's another common format in Vedic literature, just as Arjuna asked questions and Krishna gave answers. Question-answer format is standard. Maharishi Muni spoke, and you know, different persons were asking, and the Vishnu Purana, something like that. So they asked a number of questions, and they were really good questions. Here's the first question. If you had the opportunity to ask Sutta Goswami, someone who had heard Srimad Bhagavatam directly from Shukadeva, what would you ask them? So the first question the sages asked was, in this age of Kali, here's a little preamble, Prayinal Payushakshavya, Kalavasmin Yugejana, Kalau, in the age of Kali, Yugejana, the people in this age of Kali, they're very unfortunate. Manda, Sumanda, Matayo, Manda Bhagya Yupadrita. Manda means bad. People are less inclined spiritually. Their duration of life is diminished, their memory is diminished, their good qualities are diminished, inclination towards spiritual activity is diminished, and above all, their minds are always disturbed, because that's what Kali means. They're always quarreling. I mean, isn't it amazing? Just like, if you have the good fortune of opening an internet site with news, pick your quarrel. And it's not just one day out of, you know, a year. It's every day. It's quarreling in big time, small time, medium time, but quarreling over generally trifles. Sometimes it's something significant. And anyway, the age of Kali. So they're recognizing it's the age of Kali that's very difficult. They say, who's going to take up the study of all the Vedas? No one is going to do that. They don't have the capacity if they tried. And if they tried, they're the people that will misguide them. So could you do this? Could you just, in a very simple, concise form, express what's the essence of all the Vedas, please? Nice question. And in two verses, he does. And in this morning's Srimad Bhagavatam class, we read one of those verses quoted in two successive purports. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. Causelessly transcendental knowledge and detachment from all things temporary arise. Those two qualities naturally arise when one takes up devotional service to Vasudeva, Krishna. Vasudeva Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha. And Savaipung Sangparo Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adhoksaja. Devotional service is rendered unto Adhoksaja. Ahaitukya Pratyata Yayatma Suprasidati. Then when one does that, one becomes fully satisfied. Not just prasana, but suprasana. Completely satisfied. And what happens, Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita, when you become satisfied spiritually, naturally, detachment from limited and temporary things follows. Really easy. On the one hand is a greater pleasure, and the other hand a lesser pleasure. Which one are you going to take? Really simple choice. But the lesser pleasure seems very attractive when you don't have a greater pleasure. It's something like at night, when there's a firefly or a bunch of fireflies zooming around. Wow, look at that. Zoom, zoom, zoom. But what do you see during the daytime? No attraction at all. The same bug can be flying around. But the light of the sun is so bright, it's just a bug. But at night, oh, look at that. Isn't it? So, in the age of Kali, where there's a lack of light, or illumination or enlightened persons. A fool appears to be a knowledgeable person. Isn't it? Babble, babble, babble. And, oh, listen to that. Prabhupada, one time he was giving a lecture and he was imitating a professor that would speak a series of syllables that was unintelligible. And I can't repeat how he did it. But he said, the audience goes, oh, I can't understand a word he's saying. He must be very intelligent. So in this age of Kali, it's very difficult to pursue and achieve genuine spiritual knowledge. And so the essence of the Vedas is made very easy, very easily approachable. That which awakens devotion in service and in love to the supreme cause of all causes, that's para-bhakti, or para-dharma, transcendental practice of the soul's natural activity. That's the highest. Anyway, there's a series of other questions. And there's the sixth of the six questions is another very nice question, which is, now that Krishna has left, because Krishna had left, and Kali Yuga had begun, when Krishna was present, Dharma was protected. Now that Krishna has gone, how will Dharma be protected? All auspiciousness, just by Krishna's touching his lotus feet to the earth, auspiciousness was created. Earth supplied bountiful everything, and wherever there was Dharma glani, or there was discrepancy in Dharma, Krishna corrected it. One of the statements he makes in Bhagavad Gita. Wherever there is discrepancy in religion, Dharma Shiglani, I appear, Srinjamyaham. So now that Krishna is gone, what is the shelter for Dharma? Then the answer is a very beautiful poetic answer. Which way is west? In this house? That side. Okay. Just as the sun may set in the west, but sometime shortly after the moon may rise in the east, so similarly, just after Krishna's departure, on the eastern horizon, the moon, as brilliant as the sun, has appeared in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Poetic. Because sun gives light, and the moon gives reflected light. But even there's a full moon. It's really bright when there's a full moon. But still, can't see as well as with the sun. And so the poetry says, as brilliant as the sun. But the rays of the sun are sometimes hot and scorching. But the rays of the moon are always soothing and cool. So the Bhagavatam appeared. When Krishna came, he came with his weapons. And he dismissed the demons. But in the age of Kali, where's the incarnation of the Lord with weapons? The weapon, instead, is the Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's soothing and cooling. It does the same thing. It diminishes sinful tendency and awakens loving attraction for the Supreme. And that way, Dharma is given protection and shelter. Very beautiful. So, in other Puranas, Padma Purana being one of them, that the Puranas are divided, well, there's 18 principal Puranas. We'll do this. We'll go to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 4. The first three chapters are those six questions and the answers to those six questions. It sets like, here's the introduction, or the essence of the whole Bhagavatam is in those first three chapters. So after hearing this wonderful news that after Krishna has departed on the western horizon, he's appeared shortly after Krishna's departure in the form of this Srimad Bhagavatam, giving light as brilliant as the sun. So the very next part, chapter 4, the sages say, "Ooh, this is very nice. Can you describe how the Bhagavatam appeared?" Like, you know, we just observed Radhastami, Radharani's appearance. And before that is Janmastami, Krishna's appearance. And before that is Balaram Jayanti, Balaram's appearance. We like to hear, you know, even one of us, we have a birthday. Oh, it's happy birthday. And we have a little. So they wanted to hear how the Bhagavatam appeared. And the description goes like this. As the sages of Naimisharanya understood that Kali Yuga had begun, Sutta described that Vyasadeva, before that, he understood that Kali Yuga was going to appear. Because Vyasadeva is a avatar of Vishnu, a Shaktivesh avatar, empowered incarnation of the Lord. And he's empowered with the Lord's literary potency. He's an incarnation. And so his name is Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, because he was born on a dvipa, or an island. That's a long story, how that happened. Parashara was his father. Vyas was his son. But he understood, it's not just my son, it's an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So Vyasadeva had the capacity of perfectly knowing. Not only he was a rishi, he was Trikalagya Rishi. He could know things perfectly at present, all things, and equally he could know all things in the past, and equally he could know all things in the future. That's pretty extraordinary, to know all things anywhere, at any time. But he has that capacity. So he looked into the future, and he looked at the conditions of Kali Yuga, and it was an uh-oh experience. Very bad. And he described some description of the conditions that he saw. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's detailed descriptions of what the end of the age of Kali will be like. If you want to get inspired to get your act together so you won't have to take birth during that particular period of time, read the 11th canto. It's an actual depiction. It's like describing for somebody that knows how the four seasons turn. At least here in the West, there's four seasons. In India, there's more. But we know it's nice and warm now, but we know that winter's coming. Well, fall will come, and then winter will come, and we know what winter season is like. Of course, here it's not so severe, but some places. And winter can be very, very severe in some places. So, on this planet Earth, during the age of Kali, it's very, very bad. And you can read in the 11th canto what happens, what it looks like. So Vyasadeva wanted to do something. He knew it would be very bad. And being a literary person, he understood, I can do some service that will be helpful if I take the Vedas, which were previously available in sound vibration, and record them, because people have bad memories. So if you write something down, then you can go and look at it. It's one of the trainings that I received as a new devotee. If you want to remember something, write it down. It works. So Vyasadeva wrote it down, took the Vedas, which was one, and divided the one Veda into four Vedas to make it easily accessible, and took those. Each of those four Vedas have different parts. And after completing the compilation of each one of the four Vedas, He entrusted each one of the four Vedas to one of his principal disciples, and they had their little team who their job was, although it was written, to preserve it. Because previously the Vedas were memorized in four different ways, forwards and backwards, and then some other rules, where, you know, they would, from generation to generation, preserve, so that it would be flawless, even if it wasn't written. So he had it written, but then further they were to be very knowledgeable. And then there were some remaining verses, which he then used, those remaining verses, to compile the Smriti, the literature that explained the Shrutis, or the Smritis. And he entrusted those to Ramaharshan Sutta. And then he made a summary of all the Vedas in Vedanta Sutra. A lot of work. Ever write a book? Write a paper for school? That takes a lot of time. And so it was a lot of work. And the description at the end of chapter 4 of the Canto 1 is, as we do when we complete something that takes a lot of work, you step back and you look at how did it come out. Supposing you're at work and you're working on a project. And it comes, you know, the completion of the project, and then you step back and, okay, how did it come out? You do a lot of testing, but still you want to know how did it come out. Or an artist, or a cook, how did it come out? Addressing the deity and, you know, like that. So he's a literary person. He was evaluating how did this work come out, and he was feeling despondent. You know, that thing that we all know what that feels like, this little pinch in the heart that says something's not right. We all know what that is. He felt that, and he was wondering why. And as he was wondering why, his spiritual master amazingly appeared on the scene at his hermitage by the river Saraswati. And he presented his question to Narada, why am I feeling like this? And there's a lot of back and forth, but in short, Narada said, what you've written is not wrong, but you've given inordinate emphasis to procedures whereby worldly-minded people can fulfill their worldly desires by the karmakanda processes of the Vedas. And therefore, the higher purpose, the actual purpose even of those rituals, is forgotten. People are now thinking they were already having propensity for material enjoyment and you've authorized it, apparently. And so what you should do is compose one literature that just speaks about the absolute truth. Nothing else. One topic only. And to do that, you should, so it was actually a two-part instruction. First, sit down in meditation. Fix your mind completely. Samyak pranihate male. Fix your mind completely upon the Lord of the heart. And that realization that you have will be the basis of your literature. Then he said, it's not just I'm asking you to do, I have done, and then he gave his whole life story. His previous life, before he was Narada. Very fascinating description. That tells us the elements that are useful for us of how to go from an obscure nobody, which was Narada's position in his previous life. He was a son of a maidservant who didn't even know who his father was. No high birth, no education. Totally insignificant. And he became a perfected being. And the steps involved are identified. And then in this day of Brahma, he appeared as Narada. So he lives for a long time, whole day of Brahma. 311,040,000 years. A long lifetime. And this Srimad Bhagavatam is that literature that he wrote. It's a it's a literature that is simply describing the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, and the means to achieve Him. Sadhya and sadhana. Sadhya is the goal, and sadhana is the means to achieve the goal. And the means to achieve the goal that's already expressed. Vasudeva Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojata. It's the process of devotional service. And how to perform the process of devotional service is within the Bhagavatam. The primary process is what we're doing right now. Hearing. Shravanam. And Kirtanam. Hearing the glories of the personality of Godhead. Krishna Katha. Or Vasudeva Katha. And then vibrating that which one has heard. And in the course of that hearing and chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, the forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna is cleansed away, and the remembrance of relationship with Krishna is awakened, Vishnu Smaranam. And then other processes of devotional service, Bandhanam, prayer, Archanam, deity worship, and so forth. Dasyam, rendering devotional service in different ways. Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, that the nine processes of bhakti flow from these initial hearing and chanting. And that's what Srimad Bhagavatam is. So when back to Vyasadeva compiling the Vedas, when he got to the after completing the Shrutis, the four essential Vedas, he wanted to explain them. So he used the same Yajur Veda, the original one Veda, verses remaining from those, and he used those to compile the Puranic portion. And amongst the Puranas, there are Mahapuranas, Puranas, and Upapuranas, the different grades. And amongst the Mahapuranas, there are 18 principal Mahapuranas. And they're divided according to the modes of nature. 6, 6, and 6, according to the modes of nature, because there's three. It's an 18 principal Puranas, 3 times 6 is 18. So, Padma Purana is one of those in the mode of goodness. Maybe some of you are from South India. Looks like from the books here. And the Sri Vaishnav Sampradaya is very common in South India. And their principal authorities are Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana. They're Puranas in the mode of goodness, Sattvic Puranas. In the Padma Purana, there's a whole section describing Srimad Bhagavatam, or Bhagavat Purana. And in that section, it says, I like this very much, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary form of Krishna. And it's, you know, 18,000 verses in 12 cantos, and the first two cantos are the lotus feet of the Lord. And it goes describing, you know, the body of the Supreme Lord is found within the 12 cantos, up to his forehead, and, you know, smiling face, and his lotus eyes, and his neck, and his chest, and his arms, and so forth, down to the first two cantos. So when Srimad Bhagavatam appeared, it's like a deity. You begin worshipping the deity by approaching the lotus feet. And then further going up towards the face of the deity. Similarly, the Bhagavatam is to be understood by first reading the first two cantos, naturally. And then progressing through the cantos up to the 10th canto. Unfortunately, unqualified people like to go to the 10th canto first. But we should follow the procedure that is meant for worship, and we approach the lotus feet first. So The section that I've been describing is all found in the first canto so far, first canto Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, what is it? How did it appear? What is its message? And then there's one verse that I want to read. I can recite the verse. It's after Vyasadeva heard what Narada said, Narada left. So Vyasadeva did what Narada said. He took his sacred bath in the Saraswati River, and sat by the riverbank, and sat down in meditation, fixed his mind upon the Supreme Lord, and he saw the Supreme Lord. There's a description of what the condition of his mind, the condition of his heart, and he saw the Supreme Lord. And he saw the Supreme Lord with the illusory energy behind the Supreme Lord, because normally we don't see the Supreme Lord because the illusory energy is in front. We just see the illusory energy. But when devotion becomes very strong, the Lord calls his energy to stand behind him, under his control specifically. And then he saw how the living entity is bewildered. Some mohita is bewildered by that illusory energy. And he saw the mitigating process, how the living entity can become freed from that bewildering condition, a bewildered condition. And that method was the illumination of the message of Godhead, or message of Krishna. So he then composed his literature entirely on the basis of that realization, just revealing Krishna. Savaipunksam Parodharma, that's the message. Paradharma. Dharma is translated as religion. And there's religious duties that everyone is enjoined to perform. And there are duties according to varna, and duties according to ashram. So there's the varnashram system. That's the foundation or the basis of Dharma. And then, according to the Bhagavatam, there's Paradharma, and that is the purpose behind Dharma. The purpose for which one does and doesn't do something. There's a nice discussion presented by Krishna in the Bhagavatam when Just at the beginning, because coming up soon in our Vaishnava calendar will be Govardhan Puja. So one day in Krishna's pastimes, actually it was the same day that the wives of the brahmanas provided food for Krishna and the cowherd boys, but their husbands, the learned brahmanas, didn't. That was in the morning. Then in the afternoon, Krishna saw that his father and the elders of Vraja had amassed huge piles of something, ingredients for a sacrifice, a big festival. So at that time, Krishna was just 6 years old. Anybody in the room here just 6 years old? Who's 6 years old? Are you 6 years old? 6 years old? When Krishna was 6 years old, he lifted Govardhan Hill. Can you lift Govardhan Hill? Do you know what is Govardhan Hill? Do you know what a mountain is? Do you have an idea what a mountain is? He's being shy. Okay, sorry. So Krishna was just 6 years old, and he saw all this stuff gathered together for a festival. So he approached his father. Listen. He said, "My dear father, it is the duty of the father to instruct the son. And because if the father doesn't instruct the son, how will the son become learned? So it's the father's duty to instruct the son. And I'm asking you, what is the purpose of assembling all of this paraphernalia? I understand it's going to be a festival, but what's the purpose behind the festival? Because even if one does some religious activity and you don't understand the purpose behind the activity, you will not get the full benefit. So please explain to me what it is and why it is being done. And then he added, in family matters, there's no secrets. So please disclose everything. Very 6-year-old smart boy. So his father explained everything. But it's really important to know the purpose behind what your duties are. The Bhagavatam says the purpose behind all duty. Smartavya satatam vishnur vishmartavyu najata chit. It's to remember Krishna. All the injunctions and the prohibitions, all the do's and the do nots, all religious duty has one purpose, remembering Krishna and never forgetting him under any circumstance. I'll just share a little something anecdotal, just because it's nice. We just passed through Rath Yatra season. And one of the things I like about the New York Rath Yatra, it's the first. And it's really good. It's the second weekend of June. So many of the kids are just finished school. And so to put Krishna on the mind of family, okay, what are we going to do this summer? Krishna. That's what Krishna goes there at the very beginning. And for maybe 12 or 13 years, I had the wonderful responsibility of organizing the whole event, the parade and the festival. It was a real yajna. But a realization was serving Lord Jagannath is very special. And Jagannath's Rath Yatra is a nice way to serve Lord Jagannath. So if you're given some opportunity at Rath Yatra time to do some service, say yes and experience something. It's nice. But I did that for so many years, and then the temple president said, hey, maybe my wife could organize Rath Yatra. Would that be all right? I said, sure. I gave her my pages and pages of stuff of how to do everything. And, she consulted, and then in the course of time, she just developed her own system, and it was really nice. But I've been having a service even from that time. At Rath Yatra time, I have two main services. Well, one is just being the parade, but service-wise, is see that there's people staffing the book distribution spots. And now we have, of course, the japa booth, and so that's easy to organize because there's so many people who want to do that one. And then the question-answer booth. It's really popular in New York. I don't know what happens here in the Washington area. Very popular. People really like it. And so the sannyasi, so I go ask this sannyasi, can you take this time to that time and this time to that time and, set up the schedule. And generally there's something left at the end and I take the one at the end. So the last hour. But this year I did the last hour. And it's related to our topic of the Bhagavatam, you'll see. There was a lot of people. It was really fantastic, Rath Yatra, because for the past some number of years, 5-6 years, on Rath Yatra Day, it rains. It doesn't just rain light, it rains significantly. And this year, it rained every day for 6 days, and then on Saturday, no rain. It was forecast all week long. So, guess what? A lot of people were out. A lot of people were out in New York City, and so the parade route was packed, and the park was packed. It was really nice. And so, even it was, 6 o'clock till 7 o'clock towards the end of the day, the question-answer booth was packed. And I could share some other things, but it went, it was nice. Nice exchange. New Yorkers like to ask hard questions, and they like to get, you know, strong answers to their hard questions. It's good. It's good. It's a good crowd. And then when 7 o'clock came, the Parks Department comes to make sure we're going to keep with our, you know, breakdown time. So they're coming around, and so the people that put up the tents started coming, taking down the tents, even while I was sitting there at the question answer booth. So the tent disappeared, and they wanted to take the chairs, and so it was over. So I started moving, you know, to the next thing. And one very elderly lady who was sat right towards the front the whole time came up and said, "May I ask you, is it okay to ask another question?" I said, "Sure." And she was elderly, not just gray hair, but white hair, that kind of elderly. And she said, "In your religion, are there some rules that you're supposed to follow?" I said, "Sure." And I'll start with these four. These are regular principles. And then, of course, there's so many others. But there's rules that we're supposed to follow. And she said, I'm from the Jewish faith. And in our religion, we just teach the rules. She said, I teach every Saturday. That's their Sabbath, their holy day. And she teaches a large group of people. And then she started giving the names of the things that she teaches, and it's basically the do's and the don'ts. They have their, you know, their catechism, their teachings, and their rituals. And they do them. That's what she teaches. She said, but you kept speaking this thing of devotion and love of God and things like that, and we never hear about that in Judaism. So I said, you know, to appreciate, I said, you know, our spiritual master has taught the same thing, that dharma, or a dictionary definition of religion, is laws given by God. You know, I know that Jewish people, the laws given by God, is that's their religion. She's going, yeah, laws given by God. And a religious person is one who follows the laws given by God. He said, yes. We're taught the same thing. But this devotion message that you like so much, that's the purpose behind it. The purpose of the laws and following the laws is to awaken your devotion to the Supreme Person and engage in loving service to Him. She said, that's nice. Where can I learn more about this so I can teach it in my class on Saturday? And I was thinking, Prabhupada was brilliant. And Vyasadeva, of course, also. The message of the Bhagavatam is not give up your religion and take a better one. That's not what the message of the Bhagavatam is. The message of the Bhagavatam is understand the purpose and cultivate the purpose. And the message of the Bhagavatam is that purpose is best accomplished by the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the personality of Godhead. That's what the Srimad Bhagavatam is. That's what Narada told Vyasa to compile. One literature that just does that. Because the other literatures say so many other things. This dharma, that dharma. This religious ritual, that religious ritual. And people are not picking up on the purpose behind it. In the age of Kali, it'll become less and less, even following anything. And then they'll follow created things, but they certainly won't understand the purpose behind it. So the Bhagavatam is the purpose behind it literature. Nice. And when I'm going to open this. Whose Bhagavatam is this? It's yours? Okay. So when Srila Prabhupada was still in India, before he came on the order of his spiritual master to the West, to the English-speaking parts of the world, he translated and made commentary on the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know the story, some of you. And he chose as a verse to put in the preface of his book something that was spoken by Narada to Vyas about writing Srimad Bhagavatam. And the verse goes, Tadvag visargo janata agha viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abhadya vatsapi. Naman yanatashi yashon katani yat shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadavaha. You know the verse. Your son knows the verse. Are you looking at it?
No.
You know the verse. Okay. So it's you can look it up in the introduction or in the book itself, 176 or something like that. Anyway. Tadvag, vak means to say or speak. Visarga is creation. So that literature, this Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken for the purpose of Janata, Agha, Viplava. You're from India, you know what Janata means. The Janata party, right? The people's party. Janata, Agha. Agha means sin. And Viplava means destroy. This literature has the potency. This is before it was written, but such literature, such words spoken about the personality of Godhead has the power to destroy sin, just to hear it, just to do what we're doing. And in this age of Kali, there's abundant sin, so what to do about the abundant sin? Have people read Srimad Bhagavatam and hear it. So that's what we're doing this evening, is inviting Srimad Bhagavatam. And it has that power, just keeping it on your shelf, what to speak if you open it. What to speak if you vibrate it? What to speak if you do it regularly? But the Garuda Purana says, even if you just put it on your shelf and respect it, the natural spiritual piety comes into your life. What to speak of if you engage in the hearing and chanting process that it's actually intended for. But it's so powerful. Just keep it on your shelf. If you don't have one on your shelf in your home, get one. Bring Krishna into your home. But it's so nice, so approachable, you can just hold Krishna in your hand and vibrate the verses, and Krishna comes out of the pages. It's that kind of literature. Tadvagva sargo janata agha viplavo yasmin prati shlokam abhadyavatsvapi. Api means although the language may be imperfectly composed, Narada is speaking like that to Vyas, it's not the technique or the technical aspects, although the Bhagavatam language is very beautiful. Even if there's not some such perfect technical presentation, Naman Yanatasha Yashon Katanya, beginning with the name and etc., the name, fame, pastimes, form of the Supreme Lord. Naman Yanatasha Yashon Katanya Shrinvanti, when it's heard, Gayanti, when it's vibrated, excuse me, Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadabaha, when becomes saintly, simply by hearing, vibrating, and taking the message within your heart. And I can say this from, you know, practical experience as well as scriptural authority. If you, one who regularly recites Srimad Bhagavatam, something very wonderful, the Grananti part, is your life changes, or the way that you see the world changes. It's like that. The world may also change by the presence of devotion in your heart. You know, how people conduct themselves. There's just a little sharing. One of the places that I visit is China. And because of the government, they're allowed to have temples or ashrams in China. It's like, you know, they know that we're there, but it's not permitted by the government. So the devotees, it's challenging to become a devotee in China. You can't go to the temple on Sunday. There's no temple. And et cetera. But when to watch, one of the things I really like about going there is watching what happens when people take the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and they become transformed just from the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And, of course, some association of devotees to some extent. But their lives start to change internally, exactly as I'm saying. How they experience the world and how the world configures itself in relation to them. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's so wonderful. And then one over here that doesn't have any association shares with one over there that doesn't have any association. And they go, wow, this is amazing. And you know, it nurtures their faith like anything and makes them want to take shelter of the Bhagavatam because they don't have a whole lot of other shelter. So it's not easy, but those that do, it's a wow experience. So here it's easy and so we're lazy, kind of. And also, you know, really busy. But, you know, they're busy there too. If we take the time to receive the Bhagavatam in your home as it's happening this evening, keep it on your shelf, and, very nice, if you can regularly read a few verses, like you may do this already with Bhagavad Gita, try adding a few, you know, verse or two or three from Srimad Bhagavatam. I forget, somebody did some math. If you read 3 verses a day of Srimad Bhagavatam, how long it'll take you to read Srimad Bhagavatam? It's like a long time, a few years. But, you know, once you start reading a few verses, you want to read more than a few verses. It's wonderful. And it changes your life. You don't have to do something else. Just do that. I mean, you can do other things. You chant and take prasadam and associate with devotees. But you add this, Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. It's life-changing. Experientially, you know, the things that cause you turmoil and, you know, anger or disturbance or whatever, you know, the influences of the age of Kali, it just subsides. The world is still the same largely around us, but your consciousness becomes changed, cleansed. Shrinvata, Sokata, Krishna Punya, Shravana Kirtana, Vridyantaksto Yabhadrani, Vidunoti Surit Satam. Even sounds nice. Surit Satam. The heart becomes cleansed. Naturally. Like a commercial. Or a cleansing agent that makes the heart clean. Here it is. Srimad Bhagavatam. And it works. It's very, very effective. Even in places like China, where they don't even have a word in their language for God. Far out, huh? How many words are there in Sanskrit for God? You start with Vishnu Sahasranam, and there's, you know, 1,000. But there's so many, more than 1,000. So many. And in China, Chinese, there isn't one. There isn't one because they don't even have a concept. Imagine that. Because words are symbols, and there isn't even a symbol because there's no concept. And when they read Srimad Bhagavatam, they develop their love for Krishna. What does that say? This is powerful. And it's something that's already inside, it just needs to be brought out. Already there. So what to speak of, almost all of you, if not all of you, are from India. It's just so close to you, it's easy. So don't be complacent. Take this wonderful gift, Srimad Bhagavatam, given by Vyasadeva for the people of the age of Kali, so they can counteract and neutralize the effects, the pernicious effects of Kali, and restore the principles of Paradharma. That's what its intention is, and that's what it does. Very effective. So we're honoring Srimad Bhagavatam appearing in the home this evening, and those of you that do not already have Srimad Bhagavatam, I encourage you, consider, invite Krishna into your home. He'll be very peaceful, just sitting on the shelf, sanctifying your home. And then from time to time, you can associate with him. He's very accessible. Any comments or questions from anyone? Yes, sir. Yeah.
In the book we have the Sanskrit verse followed by translation purport. If you skip the transit, the Sanskrit line, how does it affect or does it have any benefit?
Sure. I'm personally not a Sanskrit scholar. I learned some verses, as you can see, but not because of studying Sanskrit, it's just from hearing. So, just reading the translations is sufficient. In fact, the other way around, if one just reads the Sanskrit and not specifically the purport, I mean, we're not Sanskrit scholars either, so we could read the Sanskrit and maybe not fully understand the meaning, so therefore the translation is very helpful. But most important is the purport. I'll just share this. In 1970, the Boston Temple, at Prabhupada's order, had a printing press following Bhaktisiddhanta, who had many printing presses. So they were trying to learn how to run a printing press that they bought. Didn't do such a good job. So one of the devotees that was running the press, I know this because he told me, he asked Prabhupada, would it be all right to print a little pocket, just the verse only kind of Bhagavad Gita that you can keep in your pocket and from time to time just pull it out of your pocket and recite the verse. And that way associate with Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada said that would not be so good. He said there are many translations of Bhagavad Gita, and the difference between the translations is not so much in the translation of the verses, but the commentary. And without proper commentary, people will not understand the meaning of Bhagavad Gita. So he discouraged it. He said, actually, he said, no, don't do that. So we can recite the verses, but what's the meaning of the verses? That's in the purport. And our acharyas disclose the meaning for our benefit. So please also read the Bhaktivedanta purports. Yes, sir. Well, everyone's a little different. One way to answer that is how Prabhupada advised us to answer when we were distributing volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam to the public. You know, third canto, part 4. Or, you know, second canto, part 2. People would get the book and say, well, what happened to part 1? And so Prabhupada's answer was, you can tell them, this is like ice cream. When you lick ice cream from any side, it's sweet. And that's what we said. So that's, I can say that here. It's like ice cream from any side, it's sweet. So any way you read, it's fine. However, since you've asked, you know, Prabhupada gave this explanation. Bhagavad Gita is the undergraduate study. Bhagavatam is the graduate study. And Chaitanya Charitamrita is the postgraduate study. So how well have you done your undergraduate and graduate studies? You read it once online. That's good. Maybe you can read Chaitanya Charitamrita once also. But how, you get the idea. Because there's going to be a Bhakti Vaibhav course taught here soon, right? I recommend take the Bhakti Vaibhav course and go through, not just read, but, you know, systematically study the text. And then if you do that, you know, in addition, some reading of Chaitanya Charitamrita, fine. But you will find it's postgraduate study. Okay? Anything else? Yes?
I feel it's so amazing that how Vyasadeva has, after compiling Vedas, he sat in meditation and all that, and he finally compiled this wonderful literature. And he was comparing the lesser happiness versus this higher happiness, and not having the knowledge of the higher happiness, I'm so attached to the lesser happiness, I think this is it and there is nothing more. And even if someone comes and tells that there is something better than this, and generally people are not inclined to try it out or at least hear, so I feel so that, you know, people are so unfortunate that they're not even inclined sometimes to...
This is Prahlad Maharaj's lamentation. So what he wanted is what you want, or what you want is what he wanted, which is somehow that these souls become attracted. So that's, you know, it requires a large dose of descending mercy, because those who are unfortunate are unfortunate. They're just simply not attracted. So having that concern is the beginning. And then you do something about that concern. That's what Vyasadeva did. As he had that concern, he compiled and he made it available to Vyas, to Shukadeva, and Shukadeva taught it and so forth. And our acharyas have done the same. So we are, one of the methods is the distribution of these literatures, giving people the opportunity, and then systematically considering them, contemplating their message. You can do that. So be the example of that which is the alternative, and then offer the alternative. You know, to each of us, to our capacity. The verse in Bhagavad Gita, I was thinking as I was saying this, higher happiness, lesser happiness. The verse in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says this, he gives these two options. In spiritual life, it's essential to have control of the mind and senses. You can't progress in spiritual. You can't even progress in material life if you can't control the mind and senses. So, as one tries to progress in spiritual life, the allure, the attraction of unrestricted sense gratification is, it's abundantly all over the place, all around us in all directions. So to not go with that push, or rather to control the senses, is required. But it's difficult, Krishna says. Vishaya Vinivartante, Niraharisha Dehinam. For those who are Dehinam, those who are embodied, there's Dehi and there's Deha. And Dehinam, that's us. For the soul that's embodied within a body. And to Vishaya means sense enjoyment. The attraction of the senses to go here and there and experience enjoyment. Vishaya vinivartante niraharisha dehinam. It's very difficult for those who are embodied. But raso varjam raso pyasya pram drishtva nivartate. It's possible if you have a higher taste. So that's like the cookbook, the higher taste. When there's a higher taste, it's easy to give up a lesser taste. I mean, if for most of us, if not all of us in the room, if people offer us non-veg food, it's no thank you. It's not a struggle. Oh, I wish I could have some of that other something. It's not because there's a higher taste. The higher taste is there. It's easier to give up the lesser taste. And it's true all across the board when it comes to the greater happiness. And what is that greater happiness? It's not, there's that, like this Jewish lady. There's one happiness she's finding in knowing the laws of God and following the laws of God. But the greater happiness is love. Loving service. Bhakti. She said, I can't think of even a word in our language, in the Hebrew language, for bhakti, the way that you've described it. She said, there's words like this, but that's not it either. And same as, you know, in China, they don't have a word for God, because they don't even have a concept of it. They don't have a concept. Can you imagine? They don't have a concept of God or a concept of love for God in Judaism. Not even a concept. So there's no word for it. And for such persons to take up devotion to Krishna, that's a big stretch. But it's natural because it's within the heart of every living entity. It's beautiful. And this is that sound vibration that awakens that. It brings that higher taste that makes the lesser taste easy to let go of. Vishaya vinipartante niraharashadihna. One can easily cross beyond that difficulty. Okay, well, thank you all very much for coming. Like a nice group of people here this evening. And it is a school day tomorrow, so we'll end. Was your first day of school good?
Yes, Peter.
Yeah? Thank you for saying yes instead of, oh, it was awful. Okay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.